The true Beinoni doesn't have a moment of real rest, of real tranquility. To keep his conscience clear in this world is so hard for him. Not to lose his integrity requires constant tension and toil. There were people who their whole life, they walked the straight path. And then at one moment of weakness, at one moment of letting go, they discovered in their psyche darkness that they thought existed only in Rishayim. The Beinoni is almost like a man who holds on to this hand grenade that doesn't have that button that contains it, that if he doesn't keep on holding on to it, it explodes. That's the Beinoni. That's what Alter Rebbe said in Perek Yud Gimel. Heye Beinecha Karasha. Heye Beinecha Karasha. Why Heye Beinecha Karasha? The Beinoni has to know that he has a heart condition. A very unhealthy heart condition. So the Beinoni can never really solve the problems of his life. Never really attain a state of spiritual utopia. It doesn't happen in his life. It cannot happen in your life. The Alter Rebbe taught us in Tanya, don't become frustrated and depressed because you're not to expect this. This is not part of the Beinoni's expectations to reach that state. And that tension and these doubts and these ups and downs and this constant turmoil is very difficult. And so as you grow, you won't get rid of the animal soul, you won't get rid of those thoughts and so forth. The cravings of the child, of the animal soul when we were children, grow up with us. It's just their form changes. An adult doesn't crave to those things that a child craves, not because we get rid of our animal soul. It's just the craving, the form of the cravings are different. They've changed. There's an interpretation on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Dalet, Hakina Taiva Vakovid Machina Sadam in Ailam, that jealousy and uninhibited lusts, huh? And honor remove the person from the world as referring homiletically to the three stages of our life: childhood, adulthood, and then when we reach old age. So according to this interpretation, one of the most powerful forces that drives a child is kina, jealousy. What perturbs a child often is not that I don't have it, it's that he has it and I don't have it. Why did he get the ice cream and I didn't get the ice cream? Why did he get the candy and I didn't? I don't mind if no one gets it, but why did he get it? The next stage, where we become teenagers and so forth, then the taiva kicks in. Then we assume our psyches develop into realities that experience powerful lusts and cravings and passions, which are very characteristic to young people. And then finally you turn 70, 80, 90. Kina, no! Jealousy doesn't exist so much in your life. Taivas, you're already an old man. How many cravings do you have? Kemen Meini, you got rid of your nefesh Bahamas covered. Covered. The need for honor is something that we all have, and it's something exclusive to all ages, particularly in the Nefesh HaBahamas of elderly people and so forth. So the Nefesh HaBahamas, the animal soul, obviously changes phases. The five-year-old Nefesh HaBahamas is not the 20-year-old, and not the 60-year-old, and so forth. But nevertheless, it remains there. So the Alter Rebbe's question is, nothing changes at the end of the day of the Beinoni, at the end of the year, at the end of his life. You take a pure, transcendental, godly soul. And you place it into almost an impossible situation to fight a war that has no end. It doesn't have an end. To deal with problems that have no solution. To be confronted by questions that have no answer. At the end of the day, the divine soul will remain holy, and the animal soul will remain ugly. What did Hashem want from the Beinoni? What do you want from the soul? The soul was holy, it will remain holy. Ligalarik. You place it together with an animal soul, it toils with it. Our whole spiritual life is centered around dealing with the animal soul. What do we gain out of this dealing with the animal soul? The animal soul remains an egotistical behemoth. The divine soul remains beautiful and transcendental. And that is the story of the Benoni's life. Now here you might ask the question, which you posed. In chapter 27, didn't the Alter Rebbe address the sadness that comes from this awareness? The sadness that comes from the inherent incompletion of the Benoni, which we discussed last week. One of the seven causes for sadness that we dealt with. And this was a major issue. The sadness that comes from the realization that you're never spiritually liberated. And who of us doesn't have that? Well, I don't know, maybe we have tzaddikim around the table. Basically, I could speak for myself. Why would a tzaddik study Tanya? That's a good question. You think for a tzaddik, a tzaddik studying Tanya is a waste of time? You're a tzaddik that you're saying this? How do you know? How do you know you're a tzaddik? wrote it. I saw a vart. That the Rebbe wrote in one of his journals that was recently published, something he heard from his father, and well, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, who heard it from the previous Rebbes almost all the way back, that the tzaddik discussed at length in Tanya is a dargin beinanim, because since it's a sefer shel beinanim, so every chapter is part and parcel of the sefer shel beinanim. So the tzaddik discussed in Tanya is a dinim beinanim. The tzaddik discussed in Tanya is a darg, is a level in the Benoni. In other words, it's the ideal human being as the Benoni perceives him. The Benoni has to know what a tzaddik is, and has to know about the tzaddik. It's the tzaddik as he's experienced in the Benoni's life, either at some unique times when the Benoni experiences that, or as the ideal, as the reference point. Not as an expectation, but as a reference point of who the real man is. It's how the Benoni perceives him. It's an uptight together in the Benoni, because it's Sefer Shel Benoni. So in Perek of Zion, Alter Rebbe discussed this sadness. And what did he say? Don't expect anything else, and don't get sad about the combat. Because ul elkach nivra, perhaps you were created for this combat. Not only should you not get depressed that you have to fight, celebrate the opportunity that you have to perform the mitzvah of aloy sasuru achre levavchem v'achre yeneichem, to take the impulses and knock them out, which the tzaddik can't do. V'aloy sasuru, don't follow your heart and your eyes that we say three times a day, or at least twice a day in Krishna, only the Benoni can perform. V'lai sasuru, celebrate that opportunity. And Alter Rebbe said, quoted the Zohar, that each time a Jew resists even one ugly impulse, he creates an explosion of holiness, istalik yikar de kuchabrichu b'kula almin. The glory of godliness extends and is revealed in all the worlds. He crushes Sitrachra below here. He crushes Sitrachra below. And that is the awesome power of resisting even one ugly temptation that you resist. You have to know that you're creating a very powerful revelation of godliness. And he discussed the words of Yitzchak, Vaseli matam, and make me delicacies. That Hashem is talking to His children, and He wants not one type of delicacy. On His menu, He wants two types of delicacies. One is the sweet, delicious food of the tzaddik, and one is the sour, spicy food of the Benoni. But here the question is, as he puts it, v'yididus nishmaseyem le'olam haza l'slabesh b'nefesh ha'bahamas. What is the purpose of the divine soul becoming enclosed in the animal soul? To achieve the goal discussed in chapter 27, these two souls could have remained ultimately two units. It's difficult for us to perceive that scenario because it doesn't exist. But similar to the example he gave in chapter 28, the Jew's in the middle of praying, and another person comes along and distracts him. And Alter Rebbe says that you have to ignore this distraction, as he puts it, smile and go on. Celebrate the fact that you achieved something, that's why you're experiencing resistance, and go on. To achieve the virtue of resisting a temptation, in order to crush the mask of unholiness that a tzaddik cannot do, the battle, the two souls could have remained somehow two units, the divine soul experiencing resistance, opposition, obstacles, and fighting it, and so forth. But the spiritual life of the Bein Inyan would be centered around the divine soul experiencing resistance. What is unique about our life is, and here we have to be sensitive to the Alter Rebbe's perspective of the human personality. You see, we sometimes don't even experience the fact that we have a soul. For the Alter Rebbe, the fact that a Jew has a spiritual, godly soul was a given. Hashem had it that the divine soul should become enclosed in the animal soul. They should become one unit. They should become intertwined and intertangled. We don't even feel that we're schizophrenic. We don't feel a dichotomy because the two souls form one unit. They marry each other. They live with each other and in each other. And here is the question. Imagine such a type of marriage. Marriage, any marriage, is challenging. For two people, two distinct individuals, to have a healthy and happy and meaningful relationship, as every ordinary human being, unless you're a tzaddik, knows, it's difficult enough. Why do we get married? Because ultimately there is some hope. There is hope that two human beings, notwithstanding their distinctions, can learn to get along with each other, to create harmony in their lives, and actually to live together a beautiful romantic life of love. Imagine you're putting together two people, a man and a woman, and you know that their living together will be an exercise in fragmentation, bickering, divisiveness till the last day of their life. You're putting them together to live together, knowing that till the end of their life, there will never, certainly, never be peace. What's the point? The Bein Inyan's whole spirituality is focused around and with the animal soul, even though that he will not affect the animal soul till the end of his life. So he turns the crank day after day after day. You wake up in the morning, the animal soul is there. You stand up to daven, the animal soul is there. You go out to have breakfast, the animal soul is there. Everything. Yom Kippur to Ne'ilah, the animal soul is there. Yom Kippur to Kol Nidre, the animal soul is there. At your wedding and at your bris and at your bar mitzvah and at your pidyon haben and at your good days and your bad days, it's always together. And you're turning the crank again and again. V'lei naga, v'lei paga. Every day you have viter wars and continuous wars and combats and problems and issues and so forth. And here, the Bein Inyan comes to the Alter Rebbe and weeps. The Alter Rebbe writes in the introduction that the Sefer was based on responses that he gave verbally to his chassidim. Here, the Bein Inyan has to be consoled and comforted. He's not addressing a person who's not interested in living a spiritual life. He's addressing someone who's interested in the spiritual life and needs consolation. The Rebbe used to tell a story, I heard from the Rebbe, that there was once an aristocratic Russian overlord who was traveling the country, and he went into a farm and he observed a Russian peasant, a farmer, working the soil with his plow and other agricultural instruments with such exquisite skill and talent, the movements of his hands and the symmetry of his activity was so powerful to him that it was amusing to gaze at. So he comes over to the peasant and he says, "How much do you get paid for your work?" He says, "I get paid a ruble a day. A ruble a day, which is 7 ruble a week." He said, "Would you be willing to come do the same thing in my mansion, in my palace? take your plow and your plowshare and the other agricultural, and you'll come into a beautiful room. You won't have to suffer from the heat and the cold of the weather, because it will be in my beautiful private chamber of the palace, and I will pay you not 1 ruble a day, but 10 ruble a day. So you'll get 10 times the wage you're receiving now. The man says, of course, what's the question? See, of course, he brings all his tools, he moves into the palace, and he's in this beautiful, exquisite, extraordinary mansion, decorated by the most beautiful furniture and pieces of art and paintings and so forth. And he begins doing the same movements with the same skill. And the pirates, the overlord, the aristocrat, the gentleman, is gazing with amusement and joy upon seeing this extraordinary sight. A day passes. He gives him the 10 ruble. And the peasant turns to him and says, with all due respect, I'm resigning. He says, why are you resigning? The pay is much better, the weather is much better. And he said, in the Russian, the rabbi used to say, Rabotu nevidyat, which means the work is absolutely inconspicuous. There I'm getting 1 ruble a day, but I'm producing something, and I see what I'm producing. So that is an innate to the human nature, that you don't want to turn the crank for 10 years and do nothing. So this is what Alter Rebbe addresses. It's not an easy question to answer. It's not an easy question to answer. In this chapter, Alter Rebbe will revolutionize some fundamental elements in our approach to life, to be able to give the Beinoni honest consolation. This is Derech Aruch HaKtzari. He's not interested in giving a Tylenol and telling him a nice joke and putting him on instantaneous high. This has to be a real answer. So the Alter Rebbe says, Tehi Zeis, let this forthcoming explanation, Nechemasam L'Nachemam B'Kiflayim L'Teshiyah, let this be their solace, their comfort. What I'm going to say now, let this be their nechama, l'nachamam b'kiflayim l'tishiyah, to comfort them in a double measure of aid, ul'sameyach libam, and to gladden their hearts, b'Hashem ha'sheichin itam, b'seich teirasam v'avedasam. Gladden their hearts in God who dwells among them, in their Torah and in their divine service. And here is the key issue that I'm telling you, that Hashem is Sheikhin Itcha B'Seich Teiratzcha V'Avidas. The work of the Beinoni is not futile. Hashem dwells in that Torah and in that work. The spiritual battle and daily combat of the Beinoni does connect him with something, does affect something, does create a very powerful revolution, is purposeful, is not in vain, is not futile. This shall be a double comfort. They should be able to celebrate and to become glad and to rejoice in Hashem, who is dwelling in their life, who is dwelling in their work, who is dwelling in their struggle, as he shall explain. And for this, we have to understand the significance of La'asaisai. Because what is essentially the tragedy of the Beinoni? That the La'asaisai is devoid of B'levavcha. Behavior there is, spiritual behavior there is. The divine soul expresses itself in his external life. But it's absolutely, or almost absolutely, or often at least, devoid of B'levavcha. The animal soul is not changed. It remains there, and the B'levavcha is controlled often and dominated by the animal soul. It's the La'asaisai where the Beinoni's contributions lay. So we have to understand, is there something significant about La'asaisai? About behaving in a spiritual way, about deeds, about mice in accordance with Torah mitzvahs. For who behaktim, in order to understand this, This will be prefaced. We have to preface explaining Losh and Hayinuk Bezayar Parshas Balak Al Pasuk Hachachem Einav Bereisha. The comment of the Yenuka, of the lad, of the child, in Zayar Parshas Balak on the Pasuk Hachachem Einav Bereisha. Shloima Melech, the wisest of men, says in Kehelas Perik Beis Pasuk Yudalad, Hachacham Einav Bereishai, Vahaksil Bachayshech Haylech, Vyadaiti Gam Ani Shemikra Echad Yikra Eskulam. The wise man has his eyes in his head, where a fool walks in darkness. But Shlomo HaMelech says, I also realize that the same fate awaits them both, the Chacham and the Ksil. So the Yenukin Zayar asks the question, and the lad in Zayar Parshas Balak asks, V'chi ba'anasar einoy de barnashchuli? Where else are man's eyes? What is the meaning? Hachachem einoy v'roshi, the wise man's eyes are in his head, and the fool's eyes are where? Also in his head. Elekra hachiyuvadai, surely then the meaning of the verse is as follows, and explains the meaning from an esoteric Zohar point of view. The Tnan we have learned, Yahich Barnash Begiluya de Reshar Ba'amas. A man must not go 4 cubits while bareheaded with an exposed head. Why my time without a covering on your head? My time, what is the reason for this? Zog the Yenuka, the Shechin Teshaya Reisha, because the Shechin of the Divine Presence rests upon his head. Which we already also know in Gemara Kiddushin, Aflamet Aleph, Zog the Gemara, that Reb Huna, the son of Reb Yeshua, would not walk 4 cubits, 4 amas, which is approximately anywhere between 6 and 8 feet, without a covering on his head. Why? So Reb Huna said, because Shechina l'mayla mireishi, the Shechina is above my head. So the yarmulke, the covering, represents a certain sense of surrender, of awe, of reverence. There's a feeling, a reminder, a recognition that there's something beyond me. The Shechina is constantly on my head, which is what the Zohar says. And this is halachically brought in Rambam and Hilchas Deis and Turan Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of Erech Chaim and Siman Beis. There is a lengthy discussion if it's an isur, if it's a prohibition to walk 4 cubits without a yarmulke, or it's only midas chasidus. It's a pious, it's an act of piety, but that's a separate discussion that's not relevant at the moment. And the Zohar continues, V'chol chacham einayu milay b'reishayinu. Now every wise man, Shlomo HaMelech is saying, his eyes, his interest, his concern, his view, and also his speech is concentrated in his head, which means Bahahu Deshayev Akayim Areshe, on that which rests and abides above his head. Hachacham Eina Bereisha means, since the Shechina is upon our head, which is the reason why the person shouldn't walk bareheaded. So the Chacham, the wise man, his eyes, his concentration, his interest, his focus is on Reisha, Bereisha, on that which rests upon his head, on the light of the Shechina. V'kad Einei Taman, now when his eyes, his interest, and his concern are there on the Shechina, which is above his head, Linda, he must know, the Chacha must know, that this light kindled above his head requires oil, like every flame that requires oil. Begin the goof of the Barnash Yupsilon. For man's body is the wick. It's the wick that retains the luminous flame of the Shechina. Unahira adlik leila, and the light of the divine presence is kindled above the body. So just as the flame and the wick, the flame is above the wick. The same is in the human, in the analogy, in our analogy, the body is the wick, and the flame is burning on top of the body. It's kindled above it, which is the flame of the divinity, of the Shechina. Now Shlomo the king cried out, saying, Again, in Kehelis and Perik Tesley, my Melech says, "Bechal eis yub godecha levonim v'shemen areishcha layachsa," which means your garments should always be white. "And let there be no lack of oil above your head." What does Shleima mean? "The hanahayr of the bereishi yitzlich lemishcha," for the light over his head requires oil. So my Shleima Melech says, "V'shemen areishcha lo yechsa, al yechsa." You can't only have a wick; you must have oil. The body is the wick, but in order that the flame should be sustained and should continue to burn, you must have oil. So Shleima says, make sure you give your life oil so that the flame should be able to continue to burn. What is oil? V'inun, what would you think the oil is? Zagda Azayar. We're talking about another flame. What do you say? The soul, you said? Zak Shleima, Zak Dzaya, V'inun Uvdan Tavon. Uvdan Tavon, which means good deeds. The good deeds, the Maisim Tavim, the mitzvahs that a person performs, they are the oil which supplies the light, the flame illuminating his body and his consciousness. And for this reason, the wise man's eyes are in his head. This is the reason a wise man, his eyes, his focus, his concern are in his head. He's constantly ensuring that he never lacks oil, good deeds for the light. At kan l'shaynai, the quotation from the Zayar Parshas Balak ends here. Yeah, that's what he's saying. That will be the discussion here. You're saying, what does it mean that the Maisim Tovim constantly being burnt up? Yes, just like oil. Why Maisim Tovim? That is what he's going to discuss. That will also be discussed. What is the light? What are we referring to? Now, what is the Zohar talking about? The Zohar in Parshas Balak tells the story that Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda were taking a walk, a stroll. They were walking. They were on a journey and they arrived to a place called Kfar Sichnin, where Reb Hamnuna Sava, Reb Hamnuna the elder, who was a contemporary of Reb Shimon ben Yechai, the author of the Zohar and one of the authors of the Zohar, lived. Reb Hamnuna Sava has already passed on by this time, which the Zohar discusses elsewhere in Parashas Vayechi, how he passed away before Reb Shimon ben Yechai, and Reb Shimon ben Yechai was terribly distressed over his passing, weeping miserably. But these two great sages, Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda, they lodged at his home, at the home of his wife, of Rabbi Nuna's wife. She had a son, a yunuka, a child. That day, the boy came home from school, the Zohar says, to his home. And he saw the sages. So his mother told him, go over to them and you'll gain from them a bracha. They'll bless you. So he began approaching them. And as he was about to approach them, he turned around and he walked away. And he told his mother, I don't want to get close to them because they didn't read Krishna today. And they have taught me that if someone who doesn't read Krishna in its time, the time that you have to read Krishna till a certain time in the morning, that day he's excommunicated in heaven for that day. So I don't want to go close to them. When the sages heard this, Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yehuda, they were astonished. They were amazed and they blessed him. And they said, it's true. Today, we were busy dealing and helping a groom and a bride get married. The groom and the bride were poor. They didn't have the basic necessities for a marriage. And we helped them do the marriage. And that was the time of Krishna. So we didn't manage to do Krishna. And Isaac and Mitzvah, Patim and a Mitzvah, when you're involved in one Mitzvah, during that time you're exempt from another Mitzvah. So that's why we didn't read Krishna. And then they asked them your question. How did they said, they asked them, Bri Bameya Daita, my son, our son, how did you know? So he said, and he responded, famous statement in the Zohar that's quoted a lot in Hasidic Svarim. Bereche de levushaychu yadayna kat krivana kat krivna legabaych. From the aroma of your garments, I have become aware of this fact when I approached you. When I approached you and I smelled your clothes, I became aware of this fact. They sat down for a meal. They washed. They sat down for a meal. They ate bread. And the Zohar says the Yenuka, the child, began revealing to them some of the deepest esoteric mysteries of the Torah. And the Zohar says what he discussed with them. So Rabbi Yehuda tells him, son, what's the name of your father? Who are you? So he stood up, the Zohar says, and he went and he kissed his mother. And he asked his mother if he should tell them about his father. And they discussed it for a little bit, and then he came back to them and he says, you don't deserve to know who my father is. So Rabbi Yehuda turned to Rabbi Yitzchak and he says, Kedidamilon, it seems to me that Hayinukalav Barnashu, that this child is not a human being. As Kemenshnisht. As the day continued, he started to say this Torah. We had the question, what? Where should the eyes be? Not Bereishai. And he went on saying this whole thing. These are all a quoting word for word from the Yenuka's mouth. And he continued to ensure that the Shechina receives the necessary oil which are of Dan, Tav, and good deeds. Most of Parshas Balak is pervaded by powerful, amazing, esoteric, Kabbalistic thoughts that the Yenuka revealed to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yitzchak. The Kabbalists explain, the Ramaz explains it, Rabbi Meisha Zakuta, the Arizal explains in the Sefer HaGilgulim, that the phenomenon of this Yenuka, of this child, as of other Yenukas in Zohar in various places, we have situations where a Yenuka, where a young lad communicates Kabbalistic teachings, is a phenomenon which is connected with reincarnation. These souls have already once been in the world, and they have elevated themselves the first time to great spiritual heights, to the extent that they rectified their entire structure of nefesh, ruach, and neshama. Their entire spiritual structure has been rectified in this world. Now they have left the world and they have to return to, for one small tikkun, for one little healing that they have to achieve in themselves or in the world. So therefore, the complete structure of nefesh, ruach, and neshama that they already worked out enters into them, and therefore, at that young age, they're already at stage two. It's as if they have never died and reborn again. It's like a continuation of their previous life. So it's really mature adults who look like children, mature spiritual giants who look like children. When the Yehuda and Rabbi Yitzchak came back to Rabbi Shimon ben Yechai, they told him the whole story. So Rabbi Shimon ben Yechai said, he's the son of Rabbi Hamnuna Sava. Rabbi Hamnuna Sava, the Kabbalist, right, was a nitzot from Moshe Rabbeinu. The spark of Moshe Rabbeinu. Is an awesome spiritual giant. This is Rav Hamnuna Sava that was a contemporary of Rashbi. There were two Rav Hamnuna Savas. There was a later one as well. And this was his son. I don't know. I've never seen that, but I don't know. So, we have to understand what the Zohar means. When we understand what the Zohar means, what is the light above the head? What is that which serves as oil for that light? Why is it Ma'asim Tovim? We can understand what is the significance of Ma'asim Tovim. What is the significance of La'asaisai? And thus, what is the ultimate purpose of the Beinoni's life in this world? As Dr. Rebbe will discuss in the continuation of the chapter, and we'll learn it next week. Yeah. You want to ask something? No, yeah. You're asking, they knew whose house they're going to, but apparently they didn't know if this child is his or not. They didn't know whose child it is. I was thinking of your question when I was reading the Zohar, but apparently they didn't know whose child it was. Why the Alter Rebbe says v'b'hagdim lashon hayinuka? That has to do with Hebrew grammar. I don't think it would be accurate to write v'hu b'hagdim lashon yinuka. In Hebrew grammar, you have to write v'hu b'hagdim lashon hayinuka. That's how you write it. Well, another interesting issue is, but that we'll discuss next week, is that Alter Rebbe quotes the Zohar in the name of the yinuka. Tanya quotes many Zohars. But here he quotes it in the name of the Yanukah, which is connected to the message, as we shall see. Yeah.
So it would seem that the fire is representing how much oil there is, the Masen Toivim.
Yeah.
And so the fire representing the Shekhinah Kedoshah. Yeah. So therefore, if the Masen Toivim run out, so the Shekhinah Kedoshah is no longer there.
Seemingly. Right. Okay. Fine, which is a basic theme in Sefer HaChinuch. In Sefer HaChinuch, many of the mitzvahs are interpreted as being deeds that evoke the heart, that inspire our emotions, which is a powerful truth, that Acherei Halav Pu'ulois Nimshachis Halav Avos. Which means your heart is where your deed is. When you behave a certain way, it creates ultimately certain emotional responses and so forth. Like, as I discussed, loving deeds create some type of love, even though in the beginning you don't have an emotion. Which is one of the reasons he gives for mitzvah smaisius, where the deed is not just symbolic, but the deed serves as a motivator or a momentum, a catalyst that will ultimately produce an inclination, an emotional awareness. Which is one approach. Here the Alter Rebbe will discuss a deeper element in the significance of La'asayse, as we shall see. It's a deeper approach that Chassidus introduced into Yiddishkeit, or emphasized in this system of Yiddish. Yeah.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.